Welcome to the Inside the Cross podcast. I'm Matt Kinnear, joined today by Hallie Griggs and Alyssa Murray-Cometti. We're talking about the NCAA's gender equity report. Hallie and Alyssa are two perfect people to speak on the subject, both for their work as advocates for women's lacrosse in their work with Inside the Cross and IL Women, and also for their experience as players being members of the Syracuse lacrosse teams that have gone to NCAA lacrosse tournaments. So we're talking to them today about what is a sobering view of the way that men's and women's lacrosse tournament is funded. This report, there's a lot of details to go in for this, so I'll just run down kind of the very broad points before Hallie, Alyssa, and I have a discussion about the findings. The most jarring thing will just be the overall funding. The women's lacrosse and men's lacrosse, women's lacrosse athletes per athlete get about $3,000 less than their male equivalent. The report focuses on the NFL stadium experience versus the mid-sized college stadium experience that is in the women's lacrosse tournament, and raises some concern about should those championships be combined. One of the most jarring instances in this is the D2 and D3 disparity, where D2 and D3 nationally has a fairly decent record in terms of gender equity, but lacrosse is an exception with the way that the D2 and D3 women's NCAA lacrosse championships are handled compared to the men's, which is lumped into the men's D1 championship weekend. There's a lot to digest here, from things like bench size, the way they use video boards at the stadium events, the promotion, the overall just funding of things like gear and the fan fest that goes along with it. And a lot of these are problems that are decades long in terms of the way the NCAA structures media rights agreements. But there's a lot to digest. So we're going to start with Hallie. And Hallie, what's your overall takeaway from this report?
I think it's one thing to talk about it, but it's another to see it in black and white. And I think that that was my first takeaway. You hear about gender inequity, gender inequality at the NCAA level, and phase one and two of these reports, they've been eye-opening and to a certain degree, but, you know, I just feel like they've also, you know, it's just kind of been underscored, you know, it's underscoring what we already know and what we've been discussing. So I think for this, when you talk about the athlete experience, when you talk about the media exposure, the overall kind of bubble that is the men's and women's lacrosse national tournament and championship weekend, you know that the men play in NFL stadiums, you know, the women largely do not. You know that the men have ESPN nationally televised quarterfinal sites, big primetime games. And you know that the women, they largely don't until the Final Four, until recently, not even, you know, the championship games weren't even linear. So I think that when you know this exists, but when you see it in black and white and you see, the committee that decided to not allow the women's Division I, II, and III championships to fully join the men's in Gillette in a few years from now. It was just, it's eye-opening. And I think that for a report like this to come out after a year that we've gone through, where a lot of these conversations have been pushed to the forefront of sports media, you just hope that change can be made, I guess. That was my biggest takeaway. You know, I think that the reason that these reports were, you know, commissioned, these investigations were commissioned, is to, you know, get a full picture of what's going on at the NCAA level and hopefully to spark change. So I think that's, you know, why we're here chatting about it, but that was my overall takeaway at first.
Alyssa, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I have to agree. I mean, having it be in writing and, you know, I think last year was really, it's been in conversation for years, but last year, especially with the women's basketball debacle in terms of their weight room, and I think Division II and III were playing in a ballroom of some sort, just that being brought up and brought to light, I think has now sparked a lot of, you know, movement in this arena. And yeah, you hope that things can change and you hope that there is a bigger investment in women's sports. And, you know, we won't know the success and the revenue that can be brought in by women's sport until there's the opportunity given to these sports. So I think it's easy to just kind of have the gut reaction like, oh, well, they won't bring in the money like the men's. And it's like, have you tried? Because you don't know. So, you know, I think that's where I stand on it for right now.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think, Hallie, your point that it's not surprising in the sense that, yeah, we all know that, you know, whether it's, you know, M&T Bank Stadium years back or Lincoln Financial Field or Gillette Stadium, that's a really cool experience that the men have that the women don't have. And, you know, save for that one year where they were played all at Gillette. That's been obvious for years. I think it's sobering in the sense when you attach numbers to it and, you know, you kind of say like, oh, so Charlotte North is worth $3,000 less than the male equivalent. You know, that's where you get, I think, a little bit sobering when you are able to put some numbers and really see the, like, you know, this is how the NCAA views its investment in these athletes. Now, I think what's, you know, the bigger picture is going to be kind of what comes out of this. And this report recommends at least exploring the idea, you know, not just for men's lacrosse, but, you know, they pointed to the revenue generating sports and how those, the men's revenue generating sports have the most discrepancy between the gender equity than, you know, the non-revenue generating sports. So, you know, sports like men's lacrosse and baseball are ones that were kind of highlighted and the case studies that were in this phase two report. You know, there was a recommendation to explore the idea of, you know, maybe combining championships. So maybe changing the future of what championship weekend looks like, you know, and that kind of has implications, whether it's men's D1, women's D1, or D2 and D3 at men's and women's levels. So there's going to be a lot to kind of maybe come from this report, and maybe the, what comes out of this report is that the format is the same, but there's just an increased investment in the women's compared to the men's. You know, we don't know how, you know, those conversations are going to shake out over the next few years, but it does seem like there's going to be some ramifications that come from this gender equity report. But, you know, I'd say sobering, not surprising is the way to put it. And, you know, the Alyssa, your point about, we're not going to know how much a women's NCAA lacrosse tournament can make when we don't invest in it or in the same way. You know, that kind of gets at the crux of what a lot of these reports have been about, is just the way that, you know, it's kind of systemic problems with the NCAA in terms of the way that the CBS and Turner rights deal is made. And, you know, we've experienced this to some extent in, you know, in our dealings with these companies, is they invest in the men's Final Four basketball tournament. And in some ways bundled into that are, you know, these things that they have to do for the other sports. And I'm using kind of some dumbed down language here, but that's where you get the fan fest at the men's NCAA lacrosse tournament. You don't have that at the women's one because it's not bundled as part of this agreement that was made years and years ago. So kind of getting to the core and getting back to a level ground and building them up in the same way is going to be kind of the step that, hey, we can see what the women's sports can do. Because right now, you know, the devil's advocate argument to all of this is, well, it cost $2.7 million for the men's lacrosse tournament, but it made $2.8 million, whereas the women's lacrosse tournament made, you know, less than $500,000. So that's going to be kind of the big barrier to break down, is in terms of, you know, not just the – you're going to have to prove kind of the naysayers of, like, these women's sports can generate revenue. They just haven't been given the chance yet. Hallie, I know you're pretty familiar with, you know, the way that these media rights deals work, and kind of the overall experience of the tournaments. You know, you've been to both the men's and women's lacrosse tournaments. Can you just share a little bit of, like, your experience as a fan at either one of them and how different it is?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think that, you know, back to what Alyssa said, I think it's just an investment in exposure would be key to see, you know, can women's lacrosse generate more revenue? And I'd argue, yeah, it absolutely can. You know, you look at the Joe Spolina tweeted today, and I love when Joe fires out some tweets, and he tweeted today about the quarterfinal, you know, how the men's quarterfinal, they're at neutral sites. But what that allows to do, you know, you have two neutral sites for the quarterfinal games. It allows, you know, the ESPN to be there on site back-to-back broadcast. What if you moved women's lacrosse there as well? You know, what if you had women's lacrosse in an NFL stadium for a chance? Like back to when we were at Gillette, when, you know, the women's lacrosse was moved from North Carolina up to Foxborough pretty late in the game because the bathroom bill that was, you know, drama that was going on. And, you know, I think that what you saw was a very high quality broadcast from a media standpoint. You know, they were able to use the Skycam. You were tuning into the men's and women's lacrosse Division I championships. And what I loved it, you know, the broadcast quality was the same. You know, you were able to have that NFL stadium broadcast quality, taking nothing away from HOMED or Johnny Unitas Stadium, you know, or Laval Stadium at Stony Brook. They're not equipped to handle that type of broadcast. So, you know, I think you gave the media exposure was, you know, I thought that that was fantastic for the athletes that were participating, the fans that were watching from afar. But then also, you know, you talk about the athlete experience too, you know, stepping away from the broadcast rights and deals here for a bit. I just remember when we were at Gillette doing some media walkthroughs and we were there for the practices, you know, the fact that the female participants were able to experience what the male participants were, to be there at an NFL stadium. You know, you see Tom Brady and Belichick and the Patriots walk by because they're on their way to practice. You know, they're doing their media in, you know, a professional media room that professional athletes are, you know, used to doing their interviews there, and they have that experience. The girls' faces, the excitement, the coaches, you know, it was just, it was so palpable. And certainly did they feel like they were being treated like professionals at the pinnacle of their sport and the biggest weekend for lacrosse? 100%. But also, I think they were excited that they were being treated like the men. You know, there was a lot of positive buzz around the fact that the men's and women's lacrosse Division I championship was being played all at one venue. You know, we've seen the women's lacrosse, you know, we have been on site for where the Division III and the Division I women's champion has been crowned at one site. That was incredible. And again, from a media coverage standpoint, we're one of many media entities that covers these championships. It made our life a lot easier too. You know, we were able to, we already had our staff on site writing. We already had our photographers, our videographers there, to combine all six. Matt, you were saying it. I mean, that would be a dream in terms of media standpoint. And then back to the broadcast, I do think if you're combining all six championships, there's a way to make it work. I don't think scheduling's an issue. I certainly don't think hotels in a major metropolitan city like Boston are an issue. If you're practicing offsite, there are world-class facilities at many colleges and universities that would be at these programs' disposal if they need to practice and they can't get a practice time because other games are going on at Gillette. And there's more ability to weave in these different championships into the broadcast. You know, if the Women's Division II national championship game goes into overtime, do those highlights roll in the national championship of the Men's Division II overtime? Yeah, I have to imagine, because everyone's there and they're ready to set up. I can't recall a Women's Division I championship where highlights of Division III or Division II championship are rolling or in any way incorporated into the broadcast. I do think that you'd have a lot more media crossover if those games are happening in the same site, and that would lead to more exposure for all of the divisions, doesn't matter which gender.
I can't explain your point about the media, our media coverage, the inside the cross perspective. You know, I can't explain how spread thin we are championship weekend. You know, basically all of us are working around the clock, and we have to miss something because there's just only so much we can do and only so many places we can be. Generally, we're split into multiple cities. We have some freelancers out at, you know, the women's D2 is typically a week earlier and we have a freelancer who's there. The women's D3 is, you know, generally not in the same area. I guess there's been an exception here and there, but that's not in the same area. So we have to get a freelancer there. You know, that would be a difference where one of us could get some eyes on that game, do some more in-depth coverage of those games. You know, our families are spread thin. Hallie, as you just said, like the, you know, we have kids and we have to figure out ways around those schedules as well. So it really would make a hell of a difference from our perspective, combining or at least, you know, spreading them out over different weekends even, you know, would be something else. So I think we can talk about some of the, you know, maybe solutions here in a minute, but I want to talk from the student athlete perspective a little bit. And Alyssa, you know, you've played in the NCAA tournament. Your husband, Luke, has also played mm-hmm. in the NCAA tournament. What can you say about the athlete experience and how you felt like it compared to the men's team?
Well, the year that Luke played in the national championship compared to what our experience at Villanova was a stark contrast, just to use that year specifically as an example. You know, it was, I think, for many reasons, it didn't work out to have to go back to that site. But it just, you know, you go there, and granted, it was a nor'easter, and I think we must have been playing in like 40 degrees and rain on Memorial Day weekend, and that was, you know, tough enough in itself. But, you know, you play at these stadiums all year round as a player, so it's not that special. You know, you're used to playing in an arena like that. Whereas this is, like Hallie said, the pinnacle of the sport. This is what you think about all year. I want to get to championship weekend. We need to do X, Y, and Z. And then you get there and it's just, you know, not set up to be this fabulous, like, experience. To only go the next day to the men's side who are playing in Eagles Stadium. And, you know, we were probably salty already because we had lost semifinals. I'm like, gosh, what the heck? But, you know, it was a stark contrast of experience. And the venue alone, it was more conducive to fans. It's more conducive to attracting more people. It's easier to get to. You know, these are things that these major stadiums think about is like, how are we going to get our fans to the stadium? I think about, you know, I grew up being a Giants fan where coming from Long Island, you take the train to Penn Station, you take a quick train to the Meadowlands. It's set up for success for large groups of people getting to these stadiums, wherever it is, because that's what they need to do on NFL Sundays. And I think, you know, you're going to have a lot of fans coming from other major cities, and the easier you make it, the more you're going to attract that sort of traffic. And, you know, I've said it earlier on about, you know, it just causes that much more of a difference. And I've gotten, now that I'm on this rant, I realize I've gone way off topic, but, you know, if you have a daughter and a son, you now don't have to pick between where we're going to go. Are we going to go to the men's games or the women's games? It would be all right at your fingertips and that much easier to have a great experience.
Hallie, can you share anything about your student athlete experience with the NCAA tournament that sticks out to you?
Well, we all know what we're going to talk about. Yeah. And any of my teammates that are listening, you know, the bathrobe really just threw me for a loop when, you know, we're getting to Final Four weekend for the first time in 2008. And our men's team is also, they're competing in the Final Four. And we, you know, I can't recall if the bathrobe was 2008 or when we were back in 2010. But I do remember, like, this was before Instagram. This was before Twitter. This was before, you know, I'm dating myself, but like you weren't like actually live time putting pictures up on Facebook, but we were all texting with each other and the boys are like, yeah, we got this awesome gear, you know, sneakers, backpacks, like hoodies, pants, like so much stuff. And we check into our rooms and we have a bathrobe waiting for us. Like that was our, that was our NCAA championship weekend participant gift. And, you know, you look at this report and the logo, it's so funny, like now that they've updated the women's championship weekend logo, but this bathrobe does have that like random dancing woman whose lacrosse stick looks more like a wand. Like, and, you know, I still have that bathrobe, but now it's like at the time, I almost just feel like I didn't know any better. You know, it's, I, we were excited to be playing in the Final Four. And I guess I was thrilled to be getting a bathrobe, even though what college kid uses a bathrobe. But, you know, but then, you know, it's almost just like, you know, I use the, you know, you talked about women's basketball list earlier this year. It was like, thank God, the power of social media. Wow. Like those athletes took the NCAA to task and everybody else was in full support because they were able to share the athlete experience on site and there, no words were needed. It was just the picture of the weight room, the picture of, you know, the cafeteria, the picture of the gear, the picture that what these women were receiving in terms of athlete experience and treatment. And just like we talked about at the beginning of this, the overall investment that the men were receiving over the women was just so apparent. And, you know, I think back to that and that was the experience. You know, you mentioned, Alyssa, the salty loss, like we lost that day. And, you know, we were so excited to go support our men's team that won and they were playing in the national championship game, but you know, we're driving from Baltimore where we played in a college stadium. And we go up and we watch our men win a national championship in Gillette. And it was, you know, I think as a, now as a mother of a daughter, I would be so sad if I had, you know, really a daughter and a son that were having parallel experiences that weekend to see what was afforded to my son specifically, just because he is a man, to see what should have been afforded to my daughter. You know, I think that a lot of families, we cover a lot of the brothers and sisters in this sport. A lot of families can probably speak to this. And when you talk about gender inequity, so many families, Alyssa, in your household, you and your husband, you can talk about it. You know, it's to see that stark contrast just from what is being invested in your child specifically because what gender they are. It's tough. And that's what, again, it's like, we can talk about it. We've experienced it. We know several individuals that have, but to see it in a black and white report, where the NCAA is, you know, it's a nonprofit. It does, you kind of at a loss for words.
Yeah. $4,814 per men's athlete and $1,939 per women's athlete. You know, and the overall number for men's, you know, I mentioned them earlier, is bigger, but it's also a smaller tournament. You know, there's less travel involved in a lot of ways because of the neutral sites that they have. So, you know, there's a lot of things there. And, you know, we didn't even touch on a lot of the issues that are brought up in this report, whether it's the promotion in the local market being different. When you get to the actual NFL stadium, some of the other things that go along with that, like the in-house video highlights being of the last game as opposed to something from the regular season or, you know, something that they threw up there, you know, just the overall little things. But, you know, when you have a lot of little things that are added up together, it becomes a really big thing. And, you know, again, the battle I think is going to be getting over this. Well, the men's tournament makes money. The women's tournament doesn't. And letting people and making sure people realize that, well, the women's tournament hasn't really been given a chance to make money or, you know, kind of started on the same foot as the men's tournament for a lot of reasons. And, you know, moving forward, there's going to be some recommendations that are going to happen over the next few years coming out of a report like this. We already saw after the phase one that the women's basketball tournament will be able to use the March Madness branding, which to me was shocking. I didn't realize that they didn't use it. I just kind of always assumed March Madness was what college basketball was. So it was pretty alarming that they didn't use that because that's like the strongest brand that there is possibly in sports. So, you know, I imagine there's going to be similar recommendations that come out of this report. And, you know, I guess let's hear, what do you guys want to see as the next step, whether, you know, it's as specific as like which day, which tournament game is played, or, you know, as broad as, you know, some of the decisions of overall funding. And Alyssa, I'll start with you.
Yeah. I mean, as I think about it, I think just first going back to when all but the women's D2 and D3 were at Gillette, I forget what, a few years back, maybe was it 2017? I think seeing how good it can be, and I think we all are in agreement that it was a great weekend, to have it all up there, and not have the NCAA and the board members of the men's and women's board be like, all right, this is the way we should do it from this point on. I think it's definitely, it's disappointing because it seems like it takes a step back in the growth of the game. And I think for everyone involved in lacrosse, like everyone's, you know, everyone always says it, like, we want to see the game grow. And it seems like that is just the easiest way, or one of the easiest ways, to help that happen. And so, you know, I think that the next step in actually making the change would be to have the combined weekend, and to, you know, have the D2, not just Division I women's, the D2 and D3 women's involved in some capacity. I don't see, you know, if the men's and women, men's D1, D2, D3 can do it all on one weekend, there, it doesn't make sense that you couldn't do it on the women's side. And it would just bring to light so many more teams. It would include so many more people. And I just keep going back to the Charlotte North of it all. I think she's probably one of the most influential lacrosse player this past year, men's or women's. And so someone that has influence like that, to not be put up on the biggest stage possible, is detrimental to the sport. I think it's taking away from what it really could be. I think having it, actually making the change to having it be on that same weekend of all three divisions, would be a huge boost for the sport as a whole.
Hallie? I am, you know, you mentioned Charlotte North. It's funny. I'm in the process and I finally found it just in time. I was literally like racing. I'm like, oh gosh, by the time Alyssa's done, I need to get there. I'm doing a deep dive into Brent Greenbird's Twitter right now. And Brent is, I think, one of the best sports information directors in the nation. He handles Boston College women's sports media. And, you know, did Charlotte North make herself a star? Absolutely. Did Brent Greenberg pump it out to the world? He did. And, you know, you mentioned her numbers. And I remember seeing this graphic last year. In April of last season, for the second straight month, Boston College women's lacrosse, their social media interaction via their Instagram and via their Twitter, led all of lacrosse, men's and women's, in social media. They had 346,000 social interactions generated in April 2021. The next women's program was Maryland with 179,000, but the next men's program was Notre Dame with 242,000. So you're looking at a women's college lacrosse social channel that was generating 100,000 more social interactions because the work was put into it. You know, it was, you know, they had certainly an incredible student athlete that makes things look easy when they're head exploding difficult. I don't know how she does it. Taking nothing away from Charlotte, so many men and women in this game make things look cool too. But Brent Greenberg and his staff at Boston College bought in, they amplified her highlights and that program's greatness last year. And that was even before Memorial Day weekend magic that happened for this team. But you look at what I'm talking about, it's like, you look at that type of exposure, it was consumed. And I think that's the biggest piece when you look at investing in the exposure of this women's game. There are people out there that are taking it in, and they were taking it in during the busiest months of the year, more than they were taking in any men's lacrosse content. You know, we say it all the time, Charlotte North is changing the game, But Brent Greenberg changed the game last year too, and that sports information department. And I would love to see what more Charlotte North on ESPN could do. I'd love to see what more Jamie Ortega on ESPN could do this year. I'd love to see what more Chloe Humphrey on ESPN could do years from now when she gets to North Carolina. We just saw her at IDX and, you know, everyone's picking their jaw up off the floor. Like, we need to see more players like her, and I guarantee you people are going to love it just like they love the men's game.
Hallie Griggs helped out that as well. So don't sell yourself short.
We're talking about it now.
So, you know, it's funny because like this is in one way, it's a very simple issue. You're investing this much in men's, invest this much in women's. That's, you know, pretty much what the start and end should be. There's so many like entanglements from over the years that, you know, it makes it a more complicated issue. And Hallie, I think your phrase, you know, they put the work in, is really kind of what it comes down to. You need to put the work in to allow it to be successful. And I think there's a number of different ways that you could go with this. I do think that there will be changes to the championship weekend format. You know, I think it comes from, you know, as like you guys have said, and, you know, was talked about in this document, everything being at the one site all weekend, kind of a super event, men's, women's, D1, D2, D3, feels like something that, you know, maybe this will spur some momentum toward that. You know, there were, when the men's lacrosse committee, you know, this report says that, you know, they were the ones who did not want that to happen. They cited some logistical concerns of scheduling and whatnot. You know, I'm sure it's difficult scheduling. I'm sure it's not easy, but you got to put the work in to make it happen. And, you know, there are solutions. Got to be some creative solutions, I'm sure, but there are solutions. I do think there's a scenario, and, you know, a lot of listeners won't like this. And, you know, personally, I don't like this because I love seeing the men's D2 and the men's D3 championship on that level as well. But I would also love to see the women's D2 and D3 championship on that level as well. Does it become a scenario where the men's and women's D2 and D3 kind of become combined into their own event as opposed to lumped in with the D1 championship? You know, because that was a really stark difference in the gender equity there between the men's D2 and D3 versus the women's. So I think there's a lot of things that are going to have to be on the table, but again, it's, you know, the simple answer is just invest the same and put in the work to make the event as big as the, you know, the women's event, you know, whether it's in combined form or its own solo form, that's just enhanced, put in the work to make it a successful event. That hasn't happened. And I know there are people putting in the work. The staff who are working these events are incredible. You know, the people who are tasked with the job that they have in front of them are doing incredible things. It's just, you need the investment from the top level all the way down to make it work. So, you know, again, there's a lot of things that, like, when you're talking about the future of championship weekend, and I've been an advocate of moving it off Memorial Day, you know, maybe this is the impetus to make that something that happens. And there's a men's and women's final the first week of June. Obviously there's costs associated with that as well that I don't think the NCAA wants to incur, but maybe that's the best solution to make it more gender equitable. You know, maybe there's a lacrosse festival on Memorial Day weekend that includes the D2 and D3 championships and includes the semifinals from the D1 level, or, you know, one of those weekends toward the end of May. You know, there's a lot of outside the box solutions that should happen, and maybe this is where we put in the work to kind of make that happen. Yeah, I mean, a lot to really just so much to kind of digest here and talk about it. The one other like kind of secondary point that kind of went along with this is they talked a pretty decent amount about the lack of communication between the men's and women's lacrosse committees. Now, I don't necessarily blame anyone on those committees individually as much as, like, you know, it doesn't seem like they were put in a position where they interact. You know, the charge from the NCAA should be, you know, this is a men's committee, this is a women's committee, you guys need to meet in a joint session or something like that. And it's a problem that goes back to a lot of things in the sport, it goes into, like, if we want to get way off topic, it goes into the conversation of sixes and Olympic inclusion and all that stuff. So we won't go that far off topic here. But there has to be a mechanism for and an impetus for the genders of the sport to try to work together to make both better. There are a lot of people who are doing that, but, you know, from this NCAA institutional level, that needs to happen. These decisions can't be made in vacuums. When you go back to the shot clock, there was all these kind of, like, the women's rules committee was meeting and working on a shot clock. The men's committee was, you know, a few years away from doing a shot clock. I'm sure there's some efficiencies that could have been gained by those committees sitting down together for a joint session about rules. So it's just, I don't want to say that, like, the women's game needs to become more like the men's game or the men's game needs to become more like the women's game, but there's a greater good for the sport that maybe is just lost in all this because everyone has their own agenda. So hopefully that's kind of a byproduct of this, is some better communication all around. And I just talked for a long time and I just went way off script there, but that's my soapbox.
We've been going off script for a little while. It's, you know, I think the only thing that I would quickly add to that is, like, in both of those committees' defense, it's really hard to come out with the same game plan mm-hmm. when you're not in the same room and you're not in the same conversation. So, you know, if you're offering, you know, athlete group A, XYZ, you know, and the other party has no idea what you're offering, very rarely is athlete group B going to receive the same attention. So, you know, I think that, yeah, eye-opening in this report that those two committees don't have an opportunity to communicate with each other. And it's that's not on either of those committees. Certainly that's on the leadership there. And, you know, the only other thing I would add too, I do. You mentioned that you like seeing the Division II and Division III men take place at, you know, the same site as the Division I men. I do as well. I think that I would love to see the push, and, you know, then we can open it to Alyssa. I'm curious what she thinks. Like, I don't want to peel back D2 and D3 men and put, you know, the women's Division I and men here and the Division II women and men here. Like, I think that there is a model that it would very well work for a championship setting. You know, we have these professional sporting facilities that are putting in bids and willing to host all six gender divisions. And, you know, outside of a city, whether it's Philadelphia or whether it's Boston, you know, you have several universities and colleges that are no longer in session. You don't have to worry about parents' weekend. You don't have to worry about, you know, hotels being fully booked. You know, you're in major cities. There's more than enough hotel. There are more than enough practice facilities should the game fields have, you know, championships underway. I feel like there's a way to make it work. We're not in those meetings, certainly, but that's kind of where I would like to see this all go. But again, if we moved away from it, would it be great too to have the men and women in the same divisions be represented at the same sites? Certainly. I wish that there was a way to make it work to keep everything. You know, I don't know. Does this report, do they go back? Do these championships all go to Gillette in 25 and 26?
Yeah, I mean, I think you guys both are hitting the nail on the head. And I think basically, I think there has to be a way that it can all be done. I think that, like you said, Hallie, there are so many facilities, there are so many practice areas. And I'm just going back to, you know, when we were at the Final Four, you're not having like a super extensive practice the day before the national championship. For the most part, it's a walkthrough. And, like, yes, you need a full field. There's no reason you're not splitting a field with anyone or anything like that. Like, you do, there are certain needs that need to be met, but I think that can be met in so many different places. And obviously there's going to be needs for a criteria and a lot of feedback from coaches of what they feel they would need to have this be a success. But there is also a level of, like, you know, if you are going to be practicing at the Patriots practice facility versus Gillette Stadium, I think that has to be okay. And I think if you are as a coach, as a player, if you're getting too tied up that, you know, there are games being played, and that's affecting where you're playing, where you're practicing for the national championship, it's kind of going to take away from, like I said, growing the game for the greater good of the whole group. And so I think worrying, maybe that's where they're going with the scheduling issues, because I don't really know necessarily what the other arguments would be. But if you're getting too hung up on that, then you are only solely focusing on one thing, which is really can be easy to do because you're there to win a national championship. But, you know, broader scope, when you sit back, what is the best for the group? And I think that is probably the case. That's kind of where I stand on it.
Yeah. And Alyssa, I think that, like, you know, there's the, and I'm trying to word this in a way that is fair, you know, I think there's a little bit of like, this is going to take away something from me aspect.
Yes. Yes.
That needs to, like, people need to get over, like, you can kind of, you know, rising tide raises all boats, or what's the saying there? You know, you can improve someone else's situation and it doesn't necessarily need to negatively affect yours. We can work to make the women's tournament more equitable, and it doesn't need to sacrifice the men's tournament. You know, there's like, you know, we're not saying cut what you're doing so that you're at the same level. We're saying just make everything better. And, you know, with the D2, D3, like I said, I love the fact that the men's D2 and the men's D3 are at the tournament. I want to see the women's D2 and the women's D3. And, you know, Hallie, you mentioned, I think before we were recording, about, you know, Allison Johnson, her incredible story for Adelphi. And, you know, she's up for NCAA Woman of the Year. How awesome would it be if she was part of that big festival and was able to do, you know, some national interviews and, you know, maybe have a segment on ESPN, because her story is incredible. But when that tournament is a week prior in Indianapolis and they're all done, you know, that's not going to happen. You know, and lacrosse is unique. We say that all the time. And the D2 and the D3 history is a little more important and relevant to the top level of lacrosse, both at the men's and the women's level, than it is in other sports. You know, I don't really know of any other sports that have any aspect of their D3 or D2 championship held along with D1. That's something that happens with lacrosse that, you know, we should celebrate it and enhance it as opposed to take it away. And, you know, yes, it's weird, it's unique, but that's kind of what's cool about lacrosse, is that, you know, how many players have brothers that play for, you know, Adelphi or, you know, Limestone or whatever, that are going to be in the championship and have the same championship experience. It's cool. It's part of the community and the, you know, the brotherhood and the sisterhood of the game. So make it better for everyone. Obviously right now it's not equitable, and it's in favor of the men and at the expense of the women. Make it better for everyone.
Do we leave it at that? I like that. Make it better for everyone. Signing off.
Put in the work, make it better for everyone.